episode of Cave of Solitude. Is that what we're called?
Yes, that's what we're called.
Or is it the Cave of Solitude?
Cave of Solitude is fine.
Cave of Solitude here in the metropolis of Toronto. Am I doing it right?
You're doing just great.
With my co-host,
Eric Anthony here.
And yours truly, Daphne J, Lady J, Daphne the Amazing.
What else? You have any other pseudonyms?
I don't know. Take your pick.
DJ Symphony.
Yes! Yes, I was gonna say that!
Why didn't you?
I just didn't.
Bashful? Shy?
Well, you know, I just didn't want to take it upon myself to just start naming things.
Would you like to explain the history of the name, DJ Symphony?
So back in the day, when my love of music was at its peak, it still is.
As well as mine.
Right. I was thinking I was some hotshot that was gonna have this glamorous spotlight in the music world, and I wanted to be a producer.
DJ?
Yes. but my whole thing was trying to aim for a producer. Anyway, so because my initials are DJ, and I was going to be the creator of music, and I'm a girl.
And your girl.
My name was going to be DJ Symphony.
I like it. What we were planning on doing was I was going to be the MC, and she was going to be my partner in crime, a la Eric B. and Rakim style, and she was going to be the DJ. And so we would still be together, one way or the other, no matter what we were going to do.
Yeah.
We were going to be partners.
Waka, 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 waka!
And that's why we dropped the name DJ Symphony. But I still like it.
Well, that's the history on myself, DJ Symphony.
So I'm going to stay Eric Anthony, but you can call her anything you like. You got four options now. So I got to try to keep up with all your names. So how's it going, Daphne J, Lady J, DJ Symphony, whatever you go by these days?
I'm feeling loose.
You're like Puff Daddy. You got all these different names.
That's true. I don't know where if I'm coming or I'm going.
So it is official. We are the number one podcast in all of Canada. Fact.
You know this.
I'm putting it out there. I'm going to be confident about it when it comes to talking about geek culture, comic books, movies, all that jazz. We're number one.
Own it, Eric Anthony.
That's right. And Daphne J.
Like a boss.
That's right. I thought that our Toronto Comic Con coverage was pretty good. We had some really nice interviews with Sam Agro and Marvin Law. We got some feedback from them on Facebook. Yes, we are now on Facebook. We're setting that up as we go along. We still don't know all the workings of Facebook because I'm late to the party on that one.
We're a little delayed on how Facebook works.
I've avoided Facebook for years, but now that I have the podcast.
What was your reason for avoiding Facebook?
You know what? When it first came out and it was the craze, I joined it and I just didn't like how people were finding me and the whole, like, it became like a lifestyle. And I'm just like, I'm not into this. I don't like this whole thing. I feel people are watching me and getting notifications when people go for a walk. Like, I just wasn't into it. So I avoided it for years. And every time I was with somebody who went on it, I found, like, you get sucked into this vacuum of just, like, checking people's lives out. And I was just like, I don't want to do this.
So you become a creeper?
Yeah, I felt like a creeper. But in order to reach a wider audience and to reach out to, you know, creators and different fans of the hobby.
We change our perspective on it?
Yeah, yes, exactly. And it's been pretty cool so far. I don't have like 1,000 friends. But that's okay, because our goal is 100,000, and we're going to get there slowly. But
so we're now on Facebook.
And we're at episode 18 now, which is a good sign. We're here to stay. They renewed us for a second season.
They picked us up.
They picked us up. We'll be back at least for one more season, and the second one will be even better. So, Daph J, what's new and exciting in your life as far as what you want to share with the people? Maybe a pick of the week?
Pick of the week. I wish I had it in front of me. But what I ended up doing is I read a couple of comic books.
Okay.
And one that I was very emotional about. was Batman and Robin, Requiem for Damien.
Okay.
The writer for that was Peter Tomasi, and the artist was a Mr. Patrick Gleason.
I will hand you the book right now.
Thank you so
much. It's on our shelf.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
So you had recommended this to me, and you gave me some tidbits of what it was revolving around, and it piqued my interest, and I said, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. And I did, and I regretted, while reading this, I was regretting having picked it up, because it was just emotionally draining, I found for myself. Hmm. I don't know. I feel like this should be a show in itself, this book, but if we're going to do a little...
We should do a sideshow. It's just Batman stuff.
A little blurb. That would be a good idea.
So would you recommend it? I read it as well. I thought it was incredible because, okay, in the New 52, there's a lot of crap out there. One thing that I felt has been consistent is obviously the Batman Scott Snyder run. And I kind of been sleeping on the Batman and Robin. I had read the first two trades and I liked them enough, but I wasn't really sure about the direction of it afterwards because Damien had died, and I looked at this book and I was like, what's it about? Because within the story, he's not in it, but he's on the cover, so I wasn't sure. It just didn't sell me. So I finally gave it a chance. I read it and I was so disappointed that I had not given it that initial chance when it had first come out.
My reason for not having read Batman and Damian was my least favorite Robin, dare I say.
Yeah.
Because I just did not like his attitude. He was just so pompous annoying, and he was disrespectful. And I understand that that's how he was written to get you to feel that aggravation with him.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just like, you dirty little rat. Like, you're so rude to Pennyworth. And
Pennyworth. You're calling him Pennyworth,
I know.
<too.
laughs> See? You rubbed off on me. But it was just, he was just so rude. He was such a rude kid. Like, I would have smacked him.
And you were supposed to feel that way. And you know, what I had done was, I have on our shelf the run of Batman and Robin that Grant Morrison had done that gets a lot of critical acclaim. And I had read some of it, but I didn't finish all of it. So I'm like, let me go back and read it from the very beginning and see what was so good about it. And I really started to like the character of Damien, because in the Batman and Robin series that I'm speaking of from Grant Morrison, Bruce Wayne is lost in time or considered dead, right? Mm. He's not in it. It's Dick Grayson filling in as Batman.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a really good dynamic in seeing like a role reversal, how now Robin is no longer that smiling, happy-go-lucky person that mm-hmm. Batman needed. He's mm-hmm. the more serious. He's the Batman because mm-hmm. he's actually his son.
Right.
Right? And he's trained by these assassins, so he's so intense. Whereas Dick Grayson was always the lighter side of Batman, but now he's in Batman's shoes, mm-hmm. doing it as a favor to Bruce. And it was just so interesting to see the story be told from this new generation. So because Batman's thing didn't really change after New 52, the story kind of picks up, as well as the story with Damien. So I wanted to continue reading it. So I went back and I picked this trade up that's part of the New 52 now. And I just love seeing Batman from this perspective on an emotional scale, because taking nothing away from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo Batman, it overshadows everything else that is out there sometimes, and you don't realize just how good other Batman books actually are. And this one isn't a story arc per se. It's just Batman interacting with different members of his family,
of the Batman family, yeah,
and how he's responding to losing Damien and seeing him on such a human level, feeling pain as a father, and seeing people try to help him, and seeing the pain that Alfred's going through for different reasons. It was just a great study of all of these characters. I really enjoyed it. I recommend it to anybody. I know it's your pick of the week and I'm talking about it, but
thanks for taking over there, Eric Anthony.
I'm sorry, but it's a good book. It's a good pick of the week. I'm giving you kudos for that pick.
It's a really good book. It's a really it's actually one of the first times, I think, where I read something on Batman and I was thoroughly disappointed in him and his behavior.
Wow.
Yeah, I was not happy with Mr. Wayne. If I could, I would reach into the pages and shake him. But I think the way it was written, it just portrayed the pain of a parent losing a child in the most, I don't know what word to use, but
the end of it, Damien's a hero. He's an admirable character.
Yeah.
I really like him.
It was very unexpected, what you end up learning about Damien and how he admired his father. Mm-hmm. Without the cowl.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it wasn't because he was this superhero. It wasn't because he was this brilliantly trained, committed person. He was just a good person that taught Damien how to be a good person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So with all his hard, both of their hard exteriors, there's a lot behind it that is admirable.
Yeah. And I think each character that was in this story also let down a guard. Mm-hmm. And you got to get to know them a little bit better on the sacrifices that they were making for particular individuals in their life. And so you could see how committed they were to each other and how they truly loved each other as much as their mission is to bring justice. Their love for each other is what drives them.
Yeah.
I found. And it was just emotionally, it was an emotional roller coaster.
It was exhausted.
Yeah. At the end. I was so tired.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't, I needed a break.
I was surprised at how good it was. I gotta say, it's a really, really good run. My pick of the week is on the other side of the tracks, Marvel Comics. It's Amazing Spider-Man Special, written by Jeff Loveness and the art by Luke Pizzari. And it's a one-off, it's a three-part story that's being carried through three different books, but it starts off here. And I was really surprised because Spider-Man's one of those characters, they always have like a little, here's an extra Spider-Man book, because people are always going to buy it. And I didn't buy this one initially, but I had heard a lot of good things about it from different podcasts, different Instagram posts. I want to shout out, by the way, Rapid Fire Reviews, who I follow on Instagram.
Rapid Fire!
He or she, I'm not sure, but all the stuff that they read, they give a little quick review, a little blurb on it, and it's really on point, the reviews that they give. So he gave a review on this one, or she gave a review on this one. I'm not sure if I'm wrong. Correct. I'm sorry, Rapid Fire Reviews. And I really liked their review on this, so I went out and I bought it to read, and it was really good. The Jeff Loveness really captures Peter Parker perfectly. The humor is there. It's very witty. It's good pacing. His internal monologues are really good. The art is really nice. I almost felt like I wish this was the monthly writer and artist. Like, it's a fresh start because it's been the same writer on Spider-Man for a couple years now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing a good job, but this was just a real fresh take on it. And so I'm looking forward to the next part of this series. So if anyone has hit their comic book store, they saw it on the shelf, they're like, I'm not going to pick up that one. It's just a one-off, means nothing. Get it. It's worth it. It's a good read.
Pick it up.
Amazing Spider-Man Special. And follow Rapid Fire Reviews because it's worthwhile. It gives very informative on Instagram. I have a piece of news. It's not really news, but I want to talk about it because I got really excited.
Hablemos.
You're speaking Spanish now?
Sí, señor.
Okay.
Did that throw you off?
No. I was going to say something, but then I was like, people won't get it, so there's no point in saying it. So, yesterday, okay, I got excited because I saw on IGN, it was a crossover trailer for Back to the Future with another movie. So I clicked on it, my Back to the Future loves, my favorite movie. I got all excited, started dancing around the apartment. And it seemed like a joke, right? Once I saw that Vin Diesel was part of this crossover trailer and it was going to be called Fast to the Future, I was like, oh, what the heck? Like, I was just all happy about something and now this has ruined it. Because then I realized, it's April Fool's.
Right.
But then there was another article that said, read more about the actual Back to the Future Part 4. And I clicked on that. And there was a whole article about Back to the Future Part 4 and what it's going to be about and when it's coming out. And I got all excited all over again. And there was a tweet from Bob Gale, who was a producer and of the original Back to the Future trilogy. Him and Robert Zemeckis were partners. And he's like, it's official. Back to the Future Part 4 has been green-lighted for 2016. I started dancing again. I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And so the story is going to be about Doc Brown's children. You know, at the end of the Part 3, where he has two little boys.
Yeah.
So it's going to talk about what happens to them 20 years later. Right? It's been 20 years since that, no more, 22 years since that movie. And this year's 2015, all that stuff, right? So where will they be now? He's going to be in it, Doc Brown. Mary Steenburgen is supposed to be in it. There's no word about Michael J. Fox yet. And they're saying that the characters, or the actors, were going to play the sons of Doc Brown. Who do you think they're going to be?
I wish people can see.
How excited I am right now?
Right now, what's happening?
Just wait, though. Wait for it. They're saying that Jules, is for the first son, is going to be played by Chris Pine.
What?
Right?
Yeah.
And then the second, the brother, Vern, his Jules Vern, right? The author, is going to be Ryan Gosling. Imagine those two in a Back to the Future Part 4. Like, it's official. That sounds great. But you know what? It was another April Fool's joke. So I'm pissed. Because it's not happening. So I gave you all this information, got you all excited, but it's not happening. It's an April Fool's joke. I always fall for those. I should have known from the first crossover trailer that it's not going to happen. And then I read this article and I researched it today to make sure, because I'm like, I'm going to talk about it on the show. It's going to be so good. I'm going to drop the news about Back to the Future 4. Not happening.
Nathan. Aw, sorry, bud.
But see how stupid I am? Because they said 2016. That's 1 year away. When are they going to be making this movie? 1 year.
You got excited. They took advantage of your excitement.
Man.
That's what happened. It's okay.
How good would that be, though, right? Well, didn't that sound like kind of cool, though? Chris Pine, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
In the DeLorean.
The Chris Pine, maybe. Ryan Gosling?
But they're brothers. Ryan Gosling, remember that movie? He did a movie called Drive where he, like, drove his butt off.
Imagine he was also on a TV show where their school was on a cruise ship.
Okay. That would have been good. Dun-dun-dun-dun. What was that for?
That's the Batman spin.
Oh, well, okay, I'll make sure I add it in there. I'll add it in there now. Okay. There you go. So, Daphne J, what are we going to talk about this week?
We're going to talk about the comic book that I read 2 weeks ago when I mentioned it. The last comic book, you almost bit my head off because you're like, we're going to talk about that in the next episode. So I'm like, what's with the restriction? TBT, back to Miss Marvel.
Miss Marvel from Marvel Now. It's a graphic novel number one called No Normal. By G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfana. It's said to be possibly the most important comic published in 2014. Give us the synopsis on Miss Marvel from the Marvel Now.
Well, it's based on a Muslim American teenager named Kamala Khan, who turns out to be a really big comic book fan. You tend to find, though, that she seems to be struggling with trying to find out who she is in the world and also embracing, obviously, her background, her religious background, but also trying to fit in with where she is currently located, with her friends, her peers, the city she's in. So I think this is actually taking place in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And so she's a teenager, so you already have struggles as a teen. You know, you're trying to figure out what you're feeling, who your friends are, all this stuff. So she has this going on. And then one night, Kamala ends up sneaking out of her house to attend a school party. And then she realizes that, you know, this crowd isn't exactly for her. So she tries to head back home. But on the way, there's this mist storm. And so it all of a sudden activates some inhuman dormant powers that she has. And she realizes that she can, like, morph herself into stuff. Like, different parts of her body can become, like, bigger than others. Like, she's just this super human now.
Inhuman, if you will.
Okay. There you go. So she learns that she has gained all the shape-shifting powers, and she's able to change her appearance. Eventually turns back to herself, but trying to still... She has now this war within her, you know, now that I have these powers, do I help people? What can I do with my powers? She doesn't feel like she can open up to her parents about it. Kind of like just a regular teenager. You know, you're going through these changes, but you can't tell anybody anything. She has really close people in her life, her friends, who have no idea what's going on, so they think something's up with her. And then things happen. Adventurous things happen. And it tends to be kind of fun.
So if you were, let's say, a writer, right? Let's say this was your idea for a book, right? And you had the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics in an elevator. And you had to say, this is my idea for a book. You've got 3 sentences to tell him your idea for this book. How would you say it? What would you tell him it was about? To sell him on it.
What? I'm so nervous right now.
Right now. Give him the elevator pitch. What is it?
I don't know. I'm going to sound like a doofus. Superhero fan. Like, different background.
Ding, we're on the 16th
female
floor.
Female. I don't know. I don't know what you want me to say. What do you want me to say?
I don't know. I wanted to put you on the spot to see if you can, like...
I can't. I'm not like that. I'm a very, like, pre-meditative, pre-thinking person. I would have already known what I wanted to say if I knew I was going to run into that person. Mm.
So if I said to you...
Oh, no! I would have lost my chance!
You would have lost it. So if I said to you, Muslim-American girl with a Pakistani family turns out to be an inhuman... She's got to try to figure out if she's supposed to be a superhero or a religious girl. Would you want to read that?
Is that what I should have said?
No, I'm asking you.
Because that sounds a lot better.
No, I think I messed it up too. But I'm saying if I pitched that to you, would you be like, hey, that sounds kind of interesting. I've never heard of that before.
It is unheard of.
It's different, right?
Yes.
Have you... So, yeah, would you have been interested in reading something like this?
Yes. If you would have said it to me like that, that would have been interesting. It would have definitely be different than what's out there right now.
So, on first read, like when you started getting into the book, right? How did you find it? What were your impressions of the story?
It was... I don't even remember now. It was so long ago.
It's true. I find, too, if I don't talk about the book right away, after a week or two, I start forgetting all the tidbits of things that I liked about it. But that's okay.
Well, I think you initially get a tidbit of what her family life is like and what it involves. Mm-hmm. So you get right into drama. Okay. It's drama. And that can easily capture someone once you start seeing that there's some kind of... situation going on.
And what I liked too is that the drama was very real life drama. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like something ridiculous or some sort of plot that was just like, oh wow, that's like so juicy. It was just regular real life family things, and from the perspective of her culture, it was fitting. right? To be part of a somewhat a conservative family, religious conservative family, living in a very diverse city in the United States, Jersey City, right? They say it's one of the most diverse sections of the entire United States. And trying to be, you know, faithful to your religion, trying to be progressive in your education and what you're trying to accomplish being in this country, but then at the same time, trying to find yourself as a person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like the dinner conversation that the family has, I felt it was so organic.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't far-fetched or ridiculous to be, in order for it to be humorous.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that it was very engaging as a reader. Like you felt you were almost sitting there with them. What did you think of her family dynamic? Like the people within her family?
I liked the mom actually.
Yeah. How come?
Yeah. I just thought she was very, I think it was, like you said, it was a real portrayal of what family life is like, despite of whichever background you come from. Mm-hmm. Like, the mom always has something to say. And they're kind of, like, very on top of things. They're very, I don't want to say critical, but, like, mom Dukes always has something to say. Mm-hmm. And dad is always a little bit more laid back. Like, just, it's fine, just leave them, it's okay. So it painted a real scenario.
Yeah.
You know, she was like my mother. Seriously. And then you get to meet that she has an older brother who is leads a very conservative, I guess.
He's really trying to like follow his faith closely, right? Yeah.
But even the mom was like, he's just too extreme.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with it? You have a son that's like this and a daughter who doesn't care. And, like, kind of just running her mouth a little bit. Just
yeah.
Like, you know, any woman, I guess, would at times. But I just thought it was humorous. It was humorous. It wasn't... Just when I say the word drama, it doesn't necessarily mean that something negative was happening.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just regular stuff.
Yeah, you got in... You sat in on it.
Things that you can actually relate to.
Yeah, very relatable. Even if you're not from a Pakistani Muslim family, it's... themes that every family has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the brother is very extreme as far as his beliefs,
mm-hmm.
right? But on the other end, he doesn't have a job and he's not trying to look for a job.
Yeah.
And the father's concerned. He's like, you know, the only reason why you're so religious is because you're trying to avoid actually getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
And in Kamala's case, the mother's just worried that if she touches a boy, she's going to get pregnant. And the dad just wants her to be a doctor. Like, listen, just focus on school. Don't focus on the other stuff that's out there. You gotta be successful.
Yeah.
We brought you here to be successful. I even like the way the book opens up with her at the Circle Q variety store and the interaction that she automatically has with the kids from high school, like the cheerleader and the letterman boyfriend there, the jock. Like, they're not bullies, but they are condescending.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a very... I like that they didn't outrightly make her a bully, because I felt that would have been too overt, too forced. But they did make it kind of like...
It was very evident who played what role.
Yeah. Like, it's that typical ignorant comments that she makes, and I don't even know what the girl's name is, the cheerleader here, but it was
Zoe.
Just... Okay. It was just a perfect setup for a little world that Kamala would be living in.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about her is that she herself... She lives in, you know, the Marvel 616 universe where superheroes exist, but she herself is a fan of comic books and the Avengers. Like, she loves the Avengers, and she even makes her own fan fiction.
We're talking about Kamala, not Zoe.
No, yeah, Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So she's already got a thing for superheroes, which makes what ends up happening to her interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about the art?
I'm sorry, Mr. Patrick Gleason. I wasn't exactly a fan of the art.
This wasn't Patrick Gleason.
Sorry, it says Patrick Gleason.
That was the Batman guy.
I'm sorry! Mr. Patrick Gleason, I confuse you with Alfona.
At least you didn't call him Guacamole. Because last time you called the artist Guacamole.
Sorry, I'm confusing my books. I read both books in the same week. So, I wasn't a fan, I'm sorry. I always go back to that in the end, having read the story, I understand that the art always fits in with the story. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't particularly a fan of it. For some reason, I just felt that it was... Forgive the expression. I just felt that some of the artwork, it kind of felt like a little lazy. Mm. Okay. Like, it wasn't... Not that it has to be sharp lines, but... I don't know, even the shape of some people's mouths.
I found that too sometimes. Like, it just felt like you didn't finish drawing the body. Like, you just drew two lines to make the arm.
Yeah, like, it's just the head looks like a potato rather than someone's face. And they're in to give their expression. I didn't really see that. It was more body language.
Okay.
Than a specific detailed expression, I found. Okay. Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean... Art is subjective, right? There's no right or wrong. If you didn't like it, you didn't like it.
But I thought, you know what I thought though? I thought there was like good detail in people's hair.
Typical girl looking at hair.
No, but like, you know what I mean? Like the superheroes are very like the anyway, that's what I saw.
Yeah, I found that too sometimes. I think it's a purposed art style for it to have that kind of feel. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more sketchy, not as like. I refer to it all the time as like that high definition where the lines are very, very clean. But what I did like about it was because this is a... I think it really suits this story. It suits her world that she lives in. It's kind of a young world that's trying to find itself.
Right.
Trying to make sense of the world. And okay. You're trying to make sense of what's happening in her life. So mm-hmm. Nothing is very clear cut for her. But what I did like about it was the way that she looked... I really feel that more than anything, she has an identity. Like, you really feel her cultural background in the way that she's designed, the way her brother's designed. Little things, the way the shape of the face, the shape of the nose, the way that she, I don't know if you noticed a lot of times, like, she, when she's thinking or when she's in a tough position, she like, puts her lips in her mouth. Like, there's a lot of stuff there that's very purposed as to... each person's background. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff that I appreciated because I really got a sense of their identity, a sense of their culture and little, like you said, the body language, little things that each person kind of did mm-hmm. You could imagine people like that in real life, as opposed to it being, you know, everybody in the book is kind of like a cutout out of a muscle magazine. You know, every character's got a perfect body. Mm-hmm. You know, these people had just regular bodies. Her wardrobe was typical teenager wardrobe. She wore weird clothes from time to time because she's still trying to find herself. Like, in those cases, she would
mishmash her wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And those are the type of things that I really felt complemented the story and the characters within it. What did you... how did you feel about the religious dialogue of the story? Not because it's not a book that is promoting Islam, but it's very different from anything I've ever read. The only character that I can think of who is who I can connect to a specific religion would be Daredevil and him being Catholic. That's a theme that is explored in his stories. But other than that, I've never really read a character who I can automatically say is this religion, except for like Kitty Pryde from the X-Men. She's Jewish.
Is she?
Yeah, she's Jewish. But I don't know what Peter Parker is. I don't know what Batman is. I don't know. It's never mattered. But in this story, it plays a big role. How did you find that reading it?
I thought it was a very interesting perspective. Mm-hmm. I thought it was... I definitely thought it was different, and I appreciated that. It was fresh. Mm-hmm. It was fresh. That's all I got to say about that.
It was fresh. That's fine. I think it's cool to have that type of an insight into the lives of a culturally diverse family, somewhat of a minority family, where I think in North America, especially in the time we live in, Islam can be misrepresented. You know, you automatically, they always kind of connect it to some sort of negative connotation, but seeing it from this perspective of just everyday people that are living regular lives and getting a glimpse inside their homes, I thought that was kind of cool to see that.
I don't think it's just Islam that's misrepresented. I think it's any type of religion is misrepresented. You don't really realize where people come from or what their beliefs are until you actually get to know them. And then they say, oh yeah, this is what I am. And you're like, really? You know what I mean? Like, no one really... I don't know. I think people have their... I guess, notions of what they think a particular group is.
Yeah, that's true.
I think society is guilty of doing that. But I think this is a good illustration that, people are just people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously the decisions that they make and how they choose to lead their life... is most likely based on their beliefs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no one ever thinks that, oh, it's because this person believes in this or that, that that's what makes them them. Like, people tend to appreciate those type of honest qualities. And then when you come to learn what drives them to be that person, you appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Uh-oh.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah?
I think so. And the it was interesting, G. Willow Wilson, the writer, she's an American who moved to Egypt, lived in Cairo for most of her 20s, and was converted to Islam. So she's got, I think, a good background to be able to write about something like this. And when she was...
That was the only thing that I felt was, and I say this out of ignorance, obviously, when I read this, I was really hoping that... the portrayal of this family and their cultural background and their religious beliefs, even like the wardrobe that was portrayed in this story, I was really hoping it was accurate, because I wasn't going to be happy knowing if it was just people's assumption of what they thought this group of people were. So I was flipping through the pages and watching everything and seeing how the family would... mesh together, how they would speak to each other. I mean, obviously, if it's out for the public to see, it has to be quite accurate, but there have been cases where people portray a certain group that isn't exactly accurate. It's not at all what
they're just stereotypes,
right?
Yeah.
And the majority of people will just run with what is presented to them.
Yeah.
And it's not right. It's no, not...
And that used to happen in comics a lot back in the day. They used to take, you know, if it was a black character, they would purposely give it certain characteristics that people would automatically just associate with it. Give them names that were overtly, you know, African-American on purpose. They would never give them, like... put them outside of the box. So that's why characters like Jon Stewart, that became Green Lantern, was a big deal at the time, because they made him a professional. They made him an architect, or an engineer, sorry, I should say. So he was an educated man. He wasn't just some guy who lived in a ghetto and stumbled upon something, and he had a background as a crook or something like that, and then he became a hero. Like, that would have been the stereotype that was happening a lot back then. Mm. Or they would even sometimes use inappropriate terms to refer to people, like Green Lantern. One of the characters in his books was, I think, someone, the person who would fix his planes. It was a main character. It was like, kind of like his Jimmy Olsen. He referred to him as Pie Face. He was Korean or Vietnamese. Oh, like, wow. Stuff like that was prevalent.
Yeah.
Right? So there was always these stereotypes that were being presented in comics. And that's why one of the reasons I wanted to discuss this book. Because I don't think I've ever read in Marvel or DC. Actually, DC has another Green Lantern character who's Muslim. But this one gained a little bit more attention because not only is she Pakistani, teenager, Muslim, American, but she's also a girl, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing, like, all the diversity in this book, it's so much, but it's not done in a forceful way.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that type of thing is good because it allows so many different people to feel that they can relate to a book now. Because I think at some point, comic books in the past, especially in the superhero genre, there was only so much that people who could relate to certain characters without some people feeling alienated that they're not represented. Whereas in this case, even though it's a person who's a minority, a lot of people who would be minorities could feel like, hey, you know what? They're representing a wider range of people now.
Yeah, that's true.
And I like that as a female, well, I want to ask you from a female's perspective, what do you think about how females are portrayed in comic books that you've read thus far? Have you ever really paid attention to that? Because I know it's a sensitive subject to some people.
I think back in the day from, you know, certain documentaries that I would watch, I came to understand that women were kind of degraded. Mm-hmm. And they were always the victim. They were always the damsel in distress. But I didn't read comics like that. I wasn't even alive. But I know there's a history of that. Now I think women are portrayed more in a more powerful light. You know, women can hold their own. But they always have to be sexified.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And it's, you know, the boobs have to be this big. And the waist has to be this small. And the hair has to be, you know, down to there kind of thing. Does that personally bother me? It doesn't, but, you know, not every powerful woman has to look like that. You know, there's women out there who are probably single mothers who are a hero in themselves because they're providing for their family. And just because they don't have that figure or that physique, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not doing everything in their power to live. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought that this portrayal of Kamala was, like you said, it was very real. I mean, obviously she's a teenager, but she didn't have to have the great body with the fantastic here and there. She was still, I guess, modest in her grooming as well.
Yeah,
and she made sure that has something to do with her religious background.
Yeah.
But I appreciated that. You know, you didn't have to be showing your entire body to be like, I'm here to take over.
Yeah, when she got her powers, it didn't suddenly make her a bombshell.
Yeah.
Or when she turns into her alias of Miss Marvel, she doesn't suddenly get the body of, you know, a sex bomb.
Yeah.
And
it's not to knock, you know, the Wonder Woman's and the Catwoman's. And I mean, they're cool too and stuff. I like the angle that they took it in this story that you can still do something without having to be someone completely opposite of who you are.
Yeah.
You can still be true to yourself.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think it didn't really occur to me because it's one of those things, sometimes you just accept it from comic books. Like, yeah, the superhero is, you know, bulky and muscular and is completely unrealistic. Like, of course, he's a superhero. Mm-hmm. He has to look like that. I don't want my superhero to have a little bit of a belly. Or I don't want him to be skinny.
Hey, but Super Mario has a bit of a belly.
Well, that's why Super Mario is my hero. In more ways than one. But then you look at all the women, and it's like, it's eye candy, but it's objectifying women because it's almost saying, like, women aren't reading this to really care. This is a man's type of book, so we're going to give Power Girl a ridiculous outfit where she's all covered, but her cleavage shows, and she's extremely busty, which is, like, totally unrealistic and ridiculous when you really think about it. Or Supergirl wearing underpants. Like, Superman wears pants, but Supergirl just runs around with underpants. Like, it's always sexed up. And it didn't really occur to me that it's stupid, but it's just one of those things you accept because it's always kind of been like that. So this was kind of, I like that this was really representing the everyday person, like the real everyday person.
And you know, necessarily her powers weren't exactly attractive. No. Like, who wants to have a hand bigger than their body?
And biggin, that was what she would say, right? Yeah. Let's talk about her powers for a little bit, because I think that's, that we're missing out on some of the actual story here. How she got her powers. How did that happen? You want to, you mentioned it in the synopsis. She snuck out one night, right, for a party, school party, to try to fit in with the cool kids. But she realized that they were all drinking, getting all, like,
they were doing everything her parents warned warned her that
to
her,
stay away from. So she comes in contact with a Terrigen Mist. Did that confuse you?
I didn't even know what that, I don't know what that is.
That's okay, because to be honest with you, I wasn't familiar with it myself. But
I just thought it was a foggy night. And then I thought she was dreaming. And then I didn't know what was happening was actually happening until supplementary characters were getting involved, and then you can see that she was really in the midst of something. So then I'm like, oh, this is really happening. It's not a moment. It's not a daydream. It's not her letting her mind wander. So there was a part in the story where I was a little lost.
Yeah, me too. I was like, what? Is it just there's a fog, and then she has powers. It doesn't make sense. So I looked it up, and this this event takes place during another Marvel event was happening, which was called, I think it was Annihilation, or the it was an Inhumans tie-in. And so Inhumans, long history, but I'll try to make it short. Do you remember from the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the villain, Ronan?
Yeah.
Okay, so his alien background was called Kree. So the Kree, this alien race, they tried to make an army for themselves of Inhumans. So they abducted human beings and did experiments on them to give them mutated powers. Those people became the Inhumans, and they developed a Terrigen Mist themselves. That's what she came in contact with. So in this crossover event, this Marvel event that was happening, a Terrigen bomb went off that I think affected the whole world. So everybody who had an Inhuman gene in them that was dormant, that got hit with the Terrigen Mist, their powers were manifested.
Like in X-Men, where they had like some kind of Y chromosome or X chromosome that would mutate?
I sort of, but see, in the case of a mutant, that was kind of like, they refer to it as the next level of evolution for Homo sapien, whereas in this case, Inhumans were, they were humans that were experimented on, and then they developed this gene. Okay. So they're kind of mutants, but they're not, it doesn't come through their natural evolution as a human being. So, and just as a side note, they're going to be making an Inhumans Marvel movie. So it's kind of interesting that you're being introduced to it from a Kamala Khan perspective, right? This is your first introduction to the Inhumans. So that's her power set, and it's different for each one. Kind of like a mutant. So in this case, she's a shapeshifter.
Okay.
So she takes on the alias of her favorite superhero, which is Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers.
Isn't Captain Marvel a boy?
Right. Funny you should mention that. Now
he's the one that says Shazam.
But now they refer to him as Shazam. He's no longer referred to as Captain Marvel. So Marvel has taken back the name. It's more fitting that a Marvel character would be called Captain Marvel. So for years, there was always this fight between DC and Marvel Comics as to the rights to using that name. And so there was a Captain Marvel in Marvel Comics, but they referred to him as Captain Marvel, so that it wasn't an encroachment on DC's Captain Marvel. But now he's just Shazam. And so there's a Captain Marvel who's a woman. They're making a movie about her as well. in a couple years, Marvel Studios is.
Can you have a female captain?
Yeah. Huh. Sure, why not?
I don't know.
In this day and age when you've got Kamala Khan as a superhero?
No, I'm just I'm just thinking out loud. Like, captain I've always associated with, I guess, a male figure, right? But I guess, yeah, a woman, of course.
Of course, why not? And she's also a member of the Avengers, or she has been a member of the Avengers. So
you can now call me Captain J.
Oh, boy. That's too much. So what did you think of the story itself, like the adventures that she goes on? Because they're not like the world's about to die, there's alien invasion, and she's got to save the day. It was, you know, contained within her circle. Did you...
Well, there was only so far she can go. I mean, her parents, you know, she had a curfew, she had, like, limitations. She was a teenager. Where's she gonna go? She can't go, like, from here to Japan in a night. Like, you're coming home tonight. Mm-hmm. So, I understand. What was your question?
Did you like that it wasn't this huge sort of thing that she had to solve where the city of New York had to be saved? It was more like a small local thing that she was trying to step in to help. It was her friend's brother who was in trouble, and she was just trying to rescue him.
Yeah, I think that was real. I also think that when you're a teenager at that time of your life, everything is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't necessarily have to be a crisis.
Yeah.
Because everything is a crisis. You know, the fact that you don't have the coolest clothes is a crisis. That you're not fitting in with a group of people in school, that's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that you couldn't go to a party where everyone's going to go to, but the boy you like is there and you can't go, that's a crisis. Because, you know, now he's going to talk to, you know, this person and we're never going to be able to get married. Like, everything is a big deal when you're a teenager. The world is coming to an end when you're a teenager.
I think teenage girls are probably the best kind because they've got so many limitations that they've got to try to overcome and still feel they have that responsibility to do the right thing. I feel like this is very much in the vein of Spider-Man. Would you agree?
I guess so, yeah. Like, yeah, now that you say that, especially the age group.
Yeah, because she's just trying to make it home for her curfew so that her parents don't catch her walking in, which is a legitimate thing because she's still under their... rule, I guess you could say, right? She lives under their roof.
But at the same time, I find that she was quite a rebel.
Yeah.
You know, as much as she was very committed or is committed to her family and her faith, like when she was in the variety store and she's like, I just want to smell it. And I forget what it was. I think it was like a hot dog or something.
That's so funny that you said, I just want to smell it.
Oh, it was bacon. So her friend Bruno says, either eat the bacon or stick to your principles. Chow or chow not, there is no smell. Because that's all she would do. She would just go in there and she would just stare and smell the pork. And her friend is like, seriously? Like, this is what you're getting kind of low here.
Yeah, this is a whole new low, yeah.
But she would say herself, delicious, delicious, infidel meat. So she was very committed, I think, to her the life that she was taught to respect and to love. And she didn't want to dishonor her parents and turn her back on what she believed.
Yeah.
But she definitely liked walking that fine line.
Yeah. And now with the power set that she feels like I can help, just that responsibility of, like, she even says to her dad, like, if you're able to help somebody but you don't, isn't that worse than anything? Because isn't there a sense of responsibility? So I like that position she's in to have to make a choice of, I have to do this, but I got to be home before one.
Yeah.
So it's a stupid kind of, like, pickle to be in, but it's totally makes sense for a person her age. And I like that, I don't know, being a part of that adventure.
Yeah.
Without it being some huge, like,
the world is going to come to an ending end, type of buildings thing. Falling on people.
Yeah, sometimes you need a smaller story with just real characters, and I thought that this book delivered on that. Mm-hmm. Would you continue reading the series? Would you want to know what happens? Because it really does leave you on a cliffhanger. You don't know. Yeah,
I was kind of, I thought...
It's going to get bigger, right? Because there's this guy, the inventor, that you never really get to know what's happening. Because her friend Bruno, who's her best friend...
I think he's Italian, by the way.
Yes, because him and his brother talk about their nonna, which made me really happy. His brother is in some type of trouble, some money trouble, and he tries to stage a robbery.
He gets in with the wrong people.
Yeah.
And Bruno ends up finding out that he's now held captive by these people because he messed up a job. Mm-hmm. And now Kamala has taken it upon herself after she has confided to Bruno. Nobody else knows except Bruno.
Yeah.
That she has this capability of morphing into whatever it is that she wants. Mm-hmm. And she now feels that she has an obligation to help her friend. Mm-hmm. And inevitably who ends up turning her to be her brother, who ended up shooting her, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
If you want to know about it, you should pick it up. But, so yeah, she does the whole thing. She climbs out of her house. She breaks the rules. She goes out, risks her life in the meanwhile, still trying to figure out her power, because sometimes it works in her favor and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, and the more she uses it, the less quick she can heal. So it's all this adjustment that she's going through.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I heard about it. I kept hearing about it. I read an issue of Spider-Man that featured her, and I'm like, who is this? What's the big deal? I thought it was kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. But I guess they're putting her in a Spider-Man book is clear that they're trying to give her a real push. And there's that, again, that relatability to Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Because back in the 60s, his story was kind of like the Kamala Khan story. An intelligent kid who was picked on, who was just trying to fit in.
I think the other relatability is the relationship that she has with an elder. Her father, although... disappointed in some of the choices that she would make, when he was realizing that she is just another teenager trying to figure things out, and when mom would lose it and be like, your daughter is crazy, I can't handle this, and talk to her, if not I'm gonna skin her alive, kind of thing, the dad would be like, what's wrong? Like, talk to me.
Yeah.
I understand that this is a phase in your life where things are confusing and things are hurtful, and me and your mother are not going to understand, and the rules and principles and things that we put on you are very different than what you're surrounded by, but let me help you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And although Peter, I guess early in his relationship with Aunt May, didn't tell her what his secret was, but I guess confided in her in some way
or another. There's that anchor.
There's some type of something there.
Yeah, keeps them grounded.
Yeah. But again, very real, because after they have that heart-to-heart, he'd be like, you know, by the way, you're grounded.
Yeah.
Like, Just so we're clear,
you're still
messed up, and you're going to pay for it, kind of thing. And then you see that she gets angry again. And
yeah, yeah.
Because now she knows she has these restrictions, but so it should be, right? Because she is of an age where she should respect those around her.
Yeah.
Whether she likes it or not.
Yeah.
So, it was a good read. I did enjoy it. I feel like I didn't really do it justice. I felt kind of like on the spot, and I didn't really touch on a lot of stuff that I initially thought I wanted to share. But overall, I did enjoy the book.
Yeah, I think Marvel's doing a really good job at trying to put out diversity, getting different types of characters in positions where you wouldn't normally see them, and also broadening the horizons of characters so that more people can relate to somebody that's like them. Mm-hmm. Not always having that clean white superhero, if you will, mm-hmm. who saves the day, and nobody else is represented, really. I think this is an indication of how much Marvel is really trying to make their fake superhero comics, put them in a real world, and give their characters real issues to deal with.
Well, I think the undertone, I guess, of the book is that anyone can be a superhero.
Yeah, and she doesn't. She has this little frail body. Like, she doesn't look like a superhero at all. I love it.
No, but I also mean that, like, in the sense of going back to the discussion that she had with her father, when he said that, you know, we're not trying to make your life miserable, Kamala. We just want you to be safe. We want you to tell us when you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's him just being a dad, being there when his daughter needs him, you know, and that in itself, again, is being protective. You're being the hero that your daughter needs you to be when she needs your help. So anyone in any course of life can be that aid that someone needs them to be, whether it's a listening ear, someone that, you know, can physically help you, you know, even if you're a phone call away, my tire went flat, come and get me at 2 a.m, you know, you don't think twice, this is the person you call.
Yeah, yeah, so we all have a hero.
I think that's true. Yeah, that's cool. So I think that was, maybe I'm wrong, but I took it as that was the main message in the story. It doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's a good point. I didn't think of that before, but yeah, her dad was in a way her own hero. That's cool.
Although they had their disagreements, you know, that they supported each other. So that's, I think, family. It was really nice. Yeah.
It's family.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I do recommend it. Miss Marvel, written by not the one that did Batman and Robin.
G. Willow Wilson and Adrienne Alfano. Pick it up. Or download it on Comixology or any other digital way that you would download your comics. I recommend it. Daft J recommends it. So, to close out the show, we want you to contact us. If you want to contact the Cave of Solitude show, reach out to us at caveofsolitude.com, leave us a comment, or email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. We're also on Facebook as well as Twitter. Just search under Eric Anthony. We want to hear from you. We want to include your views, your viewpoints, your questions, your opinions in our show. We want you to be a part of the show. That's what really this is about.
And there are some who have reached out, who have had special requests in certain material that they want to have covered. We haven't forgotten.
No, we have not forgotten.
Eric Anthony mentioned to me that, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, but he does. Someone wanted us to cover The Watchmen. Mm-hmm. And I forget what other situation.
DC Comics_News asked for Red Sun, Superman Red Sun.
Yes.
So we are going to cover that one for sure.
So we have not forgotten.
And there's people out there, I know you listen to the show. I don't know all 100,000 of you. But I know there's a couple of you who listen to the show. And I suggest you write an email because we want to read it on the air. So thank you for listening, guys. We will be back soon with more episodes coming up. And that's it for now.
That's it for now.
Say goodbye, DJ Symphony, Daft J, Daft the Amazing.
Ciao!